My guest, as I mentioned earlier in the program, is Dr. Elizabeth Satoris, and she is an evolutionary biologist. She's here to talk about how do we get humans back into balance with nature and our societies and cultures. Nice to have you with us again.
Hello, Gary. It's lovely to be with you all the way from Mallorca in Spain.
Thank you. I remember back in 1987, there was a lot of hype around a date that was being called the Harmonic Convergence.
Yes.
And people were celebrating it all over the world in order to usher in a new era. Now, 25 years later, all we have witnessed is more oppression, more war and violence, more denialism of truth, whether it is in climate change or denialism of epigenetics and genetically modified foods, or denialism of vaccine safety and efficacy, or fossil fuel industries and the scientists supporting these. And perhaps worse, there seems to be a growing denialism about ourselves as human beings. The gap of inequality widens from a biologic evolutionary perspective. How do you account for this increasing atrophy that has been with us for these several decades?
Well, Gary, I think you're absolutely right in what you're saying, that in the last 25 years, all these things have intensified and gotten worse in so many ways. However, at the same time, during these 25 years, we've seen a huge increase in awareness of the problems that humans are causing on the planet as well. Now, to me, this is a transition time, and I look at things as an evolution biologist, as you know, over billions of years, and especially because I want to know what's on the human agenda right now. And what's on our agenda is that we have to grow up from an expansive, hostile, creative, youthful phase into a mature cooperative phase as global family. And if we don't, we're out of the picture probably as humans on this planet. So I tend to look for the things that are building the new infrastructure, the new way that we want to do things, while the old way is intensifying. Because when you get a bunch of adolescents who are running the biggest corporation in the world, they just want to play more of their game, and they don't know any other game. They really don't know what to do. I talk to some very high-up people in some of those companies, and they haven't a clue what to do, so all they can think of is, give me another fix. Give me another fix before this is over. But there's a lot happening on the good side, and I do want to say to everybody around in your area in New York, you know, I'm an old Hudson River girl. I grew up on the Hudson. And I just want to congratulate everybody that we're now through the solstice. It happened a couple of hours ago, in fact, just about 6 hours, a little more than 6 hours ago. So it's done. The world didn't end. We can stop focusing on end times now and start focusing on the beginning of where we want to go.
I appreciate that insight. Thank you. I'd like your views about corporate dominance. In the late 1990s, there was the emergence of civil society to speak out against globalization in the multilateral institutions and their corporate allies who wanted to put the planet in effect into a golden straitjacket, as New York Times writer Thomas Friedman wrote. Mm-hmm. And although we saw this as a great thing, some people saw it as a great thing, what was important at that time was the emergence of civil society. The Cold War ended, and it was being seen that the nation state lost much of its high position in national and global dominance. And the new landscape up until 9/11 was a broader playing field between government, the international multilateral institutions like the World Bank, International Monetary Fund, and the UN, then the multinational corporations, and finally civil society, each trying to define the role of governance for the future in their own interest. Mm-hmm. So you've written about globalization in the past, so I'd like to hear your analysis of who's controlling what today in the world, and how do the voices of environmental and societal sanity get heard?
Yeah, well, what you do have to do is look at the big picture and see what's on the evolutionary agenda for humans. Now, I'm not kidding when I say it's time for us to grow up, to mature into global family. All through 4 billion years of evolution on this planet, that is what has been going on from the very first bacteria who went through a long youthful competitive phase before they became cooperative. And if they hadn't become cooperative, we wouldn't be here. Because the cells our bodies are made of are actually cooperatives of ancient bacteria. And you know, once they formed those cooperatives, here's what's interesting about this cycle of maturation. Those cooperatives were new on the planet, those big new cells. And so they had to go through their own competitive youth for another billion years before they got cooperative by forming us multi-celled creatures. And now we multi-celled creatures, especially humans, have to go into the cooperative phase. But, you know, we did it once before. We did it at tribal levels when different tribes got together and cooperated to build the first urban centers on the planet roughly 5,000 years ago or so. But those cooperatives were new and had to go through a youth, so they went into empire-building phase. And what you're seeing in the corporate world today is the third phase of empire-building. The first empires were ruled by emperors, the next ones by nation-states, and now by corporations. So this, to me, is a natural evolutionary progression. But we have to face the fact that these are adolescents who have run rampant with the money system and with the corporate production system, raping the planet in order to give us those year-round Christmas shopping malls that you talk about, you know, the idiocy of our pathological consumption. But why do we do that? Because my field of science has given a bum story to the world. It has told us that we are Darwinian, greedy, competitive individualists. And that's only the youthful phase of evolution. He completely ignored the cooperative phase, without which you couldn't have 100 trillion cells that were each as complex as a human city functioning in harmony with each other. And you talk about that health all the time and the need. Look, the bacteria have come right along with us, haven't they? In fact, one scientist quipped that maybe the ancient bacteria built us as giant taxis to get around in safely. Because what we have, 100 trillion cells, we have 10 times that many, or 100 times that many, some say, bacteria in our guts running our immune system. So what we feed them is so important, as you often say. By the way, I'm a great fan of cinnamon, and it's great to keep colds away as well as eating it if you're a diabetic. I do cinnamon every day, and it's such a yummy thing. Anyway, that's my take on the corporate world. They are the adolescents who have run rampant, and we have to be aware of that, and we have to just stop supporting them. We need to build our own alternative money systems. They're perfectly legal. It can be done anytime you get an agreement among people to use any script you want to trade goods. We have to stop supporting those corporations and start living the way we want people to consume in the future, eating the food we want people to eat in the future, treating each other the way we want to treat each other in the future. It can all be done because those corporations are on the way out. The businesses of the future will only be those that are needed by their communities. So I celebrate crises. I've written a whole article on my website, you know, called Celebrating Crises, because that's the only way nature ever evolves, when it's pushed to. And we humans are really being pushed now, aren't we?
Sure are. I'm going to lay out several interconnected issues and take any one of those that you'd like to address, all right?
Sure, and stop me if I'm talking too long.
No, you're not talking too much. Following up on what you just said, as a person who's counseled tens of thousands of individuals in my career, the ones who are most motivated to make the most significant change and stick to it when it comes to their health are those that have had either a heart attack or a stroke or a near-death experience, and or have gotten a terminal diagnosis, then suddenly they're all aware in that moment. Gee whiz, And then I say, do you want to know how you got here so that you don't repeat the pattern? Mm-hmm. And then it's a whole, okay, let's look at the tipping. Let's look at how you got to where you are. And then they begin to say, aha, now I understand. That said, here are my issues I'd like for you to address.
Mm-hmm.
I've been talking for years about why we cannot live the way we are with finite resources in overly congested cities that are precariously positioned to be destroyed by nature.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we have not done a single thing anywhere in the United States. And we can't. If you're part of the existing system, you can't. And I'd like for you to address why the President of the United States, the national security agencies, the governors, the legislators, the media cannot be honest about why we cannot tell the people the full truth about how we're not living in balance with nature. And it is inevitable that there'll be a Hurricane Sandy. It's inevitable that we'll do nothing but mock it when it was here. If you didn't see it there, that I was telling my audience, you know, get your backup generators, get water, get blah, blah, blah. And no one did. A few. But mm-hmm. but the mass, instead, they were down there running out to the waves. And as the reporters say, we're down here by, you know, it's going to be hitting us an hour from now. And everyone going around as if nothing could happen because no one was saying this could be devastating. Now, could you imagine had the mayor, the governor, the president said, here's the likely outcome that's going to happen. We've done a model for you. You're going to have 5.8 million people whose lives are going to be turned upside down. At least 200,000 will lose your homes permanently. And you'll be without water, electricity, or gasoline, or food for this amount of time. Then would there have been a difference? But if we said to people in Colorado, in Nevada, New Mexico, in Arizona, in most of Texas, half of Texas, in half of California, in Utah and Kansas, sorry, you're in permanent drought. You're going to have worse fires. You're going to run out of water. You can't support a growing population that is using all these air conditioners, drinking all this water, having industry. You're running out, so we have to relocate you. You're also in an earthquake fault. The earthquake fault's got a nuclear power plant on it. If anyone began to tell the people the real truth, there would be panic. So they'd rather say, we don't want the people panicking, but when a crisis comes, we'll then try to rebuild after it. So our whole effort is look at how well we try to respond to a crisis afterwards. Look at how we never prepare for any crisis before. Your thoughts on this whole idea that the only time Americans are going to change is when we have the solar storm that's a giant 30X factor, when we have a nuclear power plant meltdown, when we have the oceans mm-hmm. take back at least a quarter of a mile to a mile of the road. By the way, 2 weeks ago in Fort Lauderdale, the network was out there, and it only made it on the Internet. I never saw it on television. The ocean had taken back through the storm, had taken back the beach, the parking lot, the palm trees, the sidewalk, and the major highway. Literally, it was up against the buildings, and all these residents are saying, gee whiz, we never thought this would happen. No one ever told us this was to happen. We only thought we had to have good windows. And now we realize that our buildings are all built. Tens of thousands of buildings on the East Coast are built with those concrete pilings on sand, which means it is not going to be that much time, maybe next year, the year after. All those buildings, tens of thousands of buildings from Fort Lauderdale, Miami, they're all going to become structurally unsound.
Yep.
Your thoughts?
Absolutely. Well, you know, you're absolutely right about that. No preparedness. And yet, the thing that I thrill to is that when the disaster hits, no matter how bad it is, that the vast majority of people cooperate immediately. And that, for me, that is a yes. See, people, we're not just greedy. We know how to cooperate when we have to. Now, I thought because we had the benefit of a big brain and a mind that can build scenarios that you know, people would learn to look ahead and to warn each other and to avoid disasters. But the older I get, and I'm getting there, the more I see that humans are just like every other species back in the history of evolution of this planet. They always have to be driven by the crises. They don't look ahead. And it's baffling to me that humans who call ourselves intelligent and who do know that we can build scenarios don't do it. Now, of course, one of the reasons is, as you well know, that our government has been bought. And it's been bought by the big corporations who are like these big hunky football players who don't know any other game and are wearing blinders and just want another fix. And so they don't want the people warned. They don't want people to start living sustainably because they want to continue their unsustainable path. And, you know, I mean, if I could talk to them, I would say, thank you for being heroes of the juvenile phase of humanity where you globalized us as a society. Would you like to be now the heroes of the next phase? A plant only grows a certain size and then it starts to flower. It just doesn't keep growing. And if you had grown forever past puberty, you'd be a giant now, completely unsustainable. Your body did it too. It has an expansive economy for a while and then it has to level off. It's everywhere. You can see the need for this. Now, when I was a kid in the Hudson Valley, all the farms along the Hudson were, immigrants in the U.S., including my parents, and they all grew food, and it was all organic because there weren't any chemicals yet for the farms. And so it wasn't expensive to run a farm, and they grew so much food, and that was Depression times. I'm talking I was born in 1936. So, the hobos came to the door and chopped some wood for supper, and all that stuff you read about in a depression, we lived well. We ate good, healthy food. There wasn't any unhealthy food. It was fantastic. And the soil never deteriorated. The water table didn't go down. We used the ice of the Hudson River year-round to feed our icebox. Life was good. We kids were outdoors. We were bonding with nature. So people shouldn't be so afraid of the depression. The worst thing that can happen is that we become dependent on each other, that we rebuild community, that we feed each other again, that we invent new money systems. So the first thing I would say to people is don't panic, but get together, know your neighbors, start being sensible about this thing. You don't need to trust the government. This is a lesson for humans to say, okay, you've practiced individualism. Now you have to weave it into community. Are you going to be dependent on letting the government help you out every time something happens, or are we going to get sustainable from the local level up? We don't have a choice anymore. That's where it's going. That's what people need to talk about and need to act on and to see it as something positive. You finally get to do it. You finally get to invent things that are clean and green and to live within the bounds of clean, green energy. It can all be done. It can be an absolutely wonderful world. And I do think we need to move people out of fear and anger. There's a big difference between discerning what's going on and being angry in judgment, because that saps your energy to do that. And I like to say to people, imagine you're looking at this human drama as if it's a play on a stage. Imagine what a play is good when there's real villains in it. But you don't say, I hate that actor. You say, wow, is he a good actor? This is a good play. The villain is a real villain. Okay, now go into that play. You're part of it. You get to play in this improvised drama and play your part. So you have to decide what part do you want to play, and you want to do something that makes your heart sing because other people won't want to join you if you don't. I really believe that people can have a good time in the worst disasters if they really behave like a community and do what needs doing. That's a bit of a rant.
No, it's not. It's actually very concise. You said it well. And we thank you for coming on. We're out of time. In sharing your insights with us, we're going to call upon you on a more frequent basis because we want to go into some other areas. Also, my next discussion with you, I'd like for you to tell us about the idea, what if we simply forgave all debt and started over?
Oh, yes.
All right.
Wouldn't that be great?
It would be. So I've got some ideas.
I look forward to being back with you, Gary, and my love to all you New Yorkers and others listening.
Thank you very much. My guest, Dr. Elizabeth Satoris.